Pennsylvania. Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, farm stress. Living or working on a farm can be isolating, and rural areas have fewer therapists. And work on a farm never stops. Penn State Extension recognizes farmers and their families have unique circumstances that may contribute to loneliness, sadness, stress, or depression, and they formed a farm stress team to help. We'll learn more during Mental Health Awareness Month. Science stories with Joe Johnson, some of the science stories that have caught our eye this week, including those solar storms that spawned global auroras, Otzi the Iceman, and the strange way that African elephants like to communicate with each other. Plus, moving toward health with Maggie Fitzpatrick from the Sullivan County Democrat, and an old comedy night in a new space. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Kyiv today to underscore U.S. support for Ukraine as it struggles to defend itself against Russia. NPR's Joanna Gakissis reports that Russian forces have launched a new offensive in the northeast, threatening Ukraine's second-largest city.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told Blinken the country is under pressure.
Thanks for coming to Ukraine, especially these days. Tough period for the east of our country, for our warriors.
Ukraine relies on financial support from Western allies to defend itself from Russia. Ukrainian troops ran out of ammunition in part because House Republicans blocked aid totaling $61 billion for months. Blinken says some of this assistance has already arrived.
And that's going to make a real difference against the ongoing Russian aggression on the battlefield.
Zelensky asked for more air defense systems to protect civilians under Russian attack in the northeast. Joanna Kakissis, NPR News, Kyiv.
House Speaker Mike Johnson, former Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy, and North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum are lending their support to former President Donald Trump as his criminal hush money trial resumes this morning in New York City. They join Trump at the courthouse in Manhattan.
I do have a lot of surrogates in the art of speaking very beautifully, and they come from all over Washington, and they're highly respected, and they think this is the greatest scam they've ever seen.
One-time Trump attorney and fixer Michael Cohen has returned to the witness stand. Cohen testified on Monday about a hush money payment that he made to an adult film star ahead of the 2016 election and Trump's alleged involvement in the scheme. Stocks opened higher this morning on Wall Street as the Labor Department reported a sharper-than-expected jump in wholesale prices last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow rose about 50 points in early trading.
Wholesale prices rose by 0.5% between March and April, a bigger increase than forecasters had expected. The Labor Department is set to report on inflation at the retail level tomorrow. Home Depot says its sales fell for the third quarter in a row. The chain's sales are closely tied to the housing market, which has been weighed down by high mortgage rates. Home Depot still managed to eke out a larger quarterly profit, though, than analysts had expected. U.S. airlines are challenging a new rule designed to crack down on what the Biden administration calls junk fees. The rule requires airlines to disclose up front any fees for checked baggage or changing a reservation. The airlines argue the rule will confuse customers by offering too much information. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow was up 62 points, the Nasdaq up 12. This is NPR News. Voters are heading to the polls in Maryland today. Republicans are hoping that an open Senate seat can help them win back control of the upper chamber. NPR's Deidre Walsh reports today's Democratic primary is a dead heat.
Angela Alsobrooks is hoping to make history as the first Black person to represent Maryland in the Senate.
I think that we ought to be able to look in that Senate and see some of all of us there, of every race, gender, and background.
The Prince George's County executive is running against three-term Congressman David Trone, the co-founder of Total Wine & More, an alcohol retail chain. Trone has poured more than $60 million into the race, making the contest the most expensive in the state's history. He argues he has a record of passing bipartisan bills in the House. Whoever wins is expected to face former Governor Larry Hogan, a rare Republican with a track record attracting bipartisan support in a traditionally blue state. And it means Maryland could be at the center for control of the Senate in November. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News.
U.S. airlines are challenging a Biden administration rule that they disclose all fees for buying a plane ticket before checkout. The trade group Airlines for America says its members already go to great lengths to explain their charges. The Biden administration says consumers could save more than $500 million a year if the new disclosure rules are implemented. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Fisher Investments. As a fiduciary, Fisher Investments is obligated to act in their clients' best interest. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and today we're talking about mental wellness for the agriculture community. Farmers are always there, keeping food on our tables and filling store shelves. It can be a rewarding yet stressful way of life, filled with uncertainty that for some can lead to anxiety and depression. Penn State Extension recognizes farmers and their families have unique circumstances that may contribute to loneliness, sadness, stress, or depression, and hinder someone from seeking professional treatment for their mental health. So they formed a farm stress team to help. Ginger Fenton is the Penn State Extension dairy educator and leader of the Extension's farm stress team, and she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
Tell us why this farm stress team was formed.
Sure. As you mentioned, I am a dairy educator, and so I work primarily with dairy farms. And part of why I was interested in this and the conversation started at Penn State was because we were seeing an extended period of depressed milk prices, and we were hearing from farms and getting more calls. Another thing that brought the crisis of stress on farms to light was a report from the Centers for Disease Control in 2016, and it highlighted, I guess that it drew attention to, that's maybe a better choice of words, to say that farmers, the suicide rate in farmers was higher than the general population. And because of those things, Penn State determined in 2020 that we should form a formal farm stress team to help address this issue. One of the really nice things, I think, is that it's a collaborative effort. So I'm an ag educator in dairy, but we have people that work with family well-being, energy, business and community vitality, new and beginning farmers, crops educators, ag safety, and we all work together and use each other's strengths to help provide resources and tools for our farmers and our ag community.
Let's talk about some of those tools and those objectives. You don't provide counseling. What is it that you do provide for farmers?
Correct. Right. We do not provide counseling. I would say Penn State Extension seeks to be the link or the conduit to help our farmers, because our ag community looks to Extension as a trusted source for providing information. And so we seek to help them connect with those services, where they can find counseling and where they can find additional support.
And, you know, I wonder if folks realize that, you know, a dreary day can get anyone down, including a farmer. I mean, may not think about it, but this is hard work. You know, there are days, the long nights and long days. As I mentioned in the introduction, there can be anxiety around just getting the food and the crops to market. You know, why is the state of mental health for farmers a concern? Is it that kind of perhaps lack of recognition?
I think farmers are very resourceful. They're very strong, but as you mentioned, they have so many demands placed on them. They feel, I think it's the innate nature of a farmer. They feel a drive to be a provider, and that adds to the pressure and the demands they feel of that occupation. They're just caretakers by their nature. I mentioned the CDC report. There was another report done in 2020 that was released. And again, I think why this became such a concern with farmers is because that we saw that rate of suicide in farmers was 16 times higher than it was in the general population.
Wow.
And that really got a lot of attention. The United States Department of Agriculture and others started providing more resources and funding to help address farm stress.
And as you mentioned, they see themselves as providers and tend not to be proactive about their mental or physical health and may not seek help until there's a critical condition.
Correct. Correct.
What are some of the factors that cause stress for farmers?
Sure. Physical work is certainly one of them. It can be a demanding job and consisting of long hours. I think of that right now. You know, I look out my window and there's tractors in the field and they may be there till late at night as we're frantically trying to get crops planted. So the time demands placed on it. It can be difficult to balance your family and your work life as well because of the demands of farming. And farmers frequently work with family members, which can be a blessing, but also can lead to some challenges as well in those family relationships and family dynamics. Financial stressors are a really big one for farmers. There's so many things that they depend on that I would say are slightly out of their control. Some of those things they can control, but things like markets, fluctuation in prices, equipment breaking, pressure for land development. There's many things that can add pressure to them. Regulations is another one. Those are constantly changing, as we see also the demands from consumers that are placed on farmers. And then another one that's been on my mind lately because of my work in the dairy world is pressure from diseases, things like highly pathogenic avian influenza, or for maybe our fruit farmers or our grape growers, invasive species like the spotted lanternfly. So there are many things. And there's one more thing I would like to touch on as well that I think can be a big stress for many farm families and farmers, and that's just that legacy, leaving something and carrying on the farm. They would like to see that somebody else values and recognizes and hopefully can continue to have the farm in their family or so it can continue to be farmed. And I think that's important to them.
That has to be a big factor, legacy, feeling that you're carrying these generations of work on your shoulders and making it happen and continue.
Definitely.
And I wanted to ask you, as a dairy farmer, you mentioned avian flu most recently in the news. We hear about it in the news. I don't think I've connected it to the farmer level and how it can impact you on a day-to-day basis. How are you reacting to this situation?
We are trying to keep up to date on it and to be here and be a source of information for farmers and help them prepare and be preventive in whatever ways that we can. My coworkers that work with poultry, I know, have dealt with this now for several years, and some of them have taken other courses, such as mental health first aid, and are prepared to have some of those difficult conversations with farmers. It can be extremely crushing to your morale and to your livelihood if something like HPAI,
yeah,
were to infect your poultry flock. We don't see the same kind of losses in dairy cattle. It's production decreases for a while. We don't have the animal mortality. But with some diseases that come into an animal herd or a flock, you know, it can be devastating to the farmer. So just knowing where they can look to for support, and as I mentioned, helping provide tools and to be there and be resources, I think are what Extension's doing and what our ag community is doing.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Ginger Fenton, a Penn State Extension dairy educator and leader of the Extension's Farm Stress Team. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we're talking about mental wellness for the agriculture community today. Ginger, what have you heard from some of the farmers who've attended your webinars and workshops? Do they find it beneficial and helpful? You know, as we said, may not be the most proactive community, but the people that do attend mm-hmm. and are there, what are you hearing back?
It is a tough subject. So I would say we get limited feedback, partially just because of the nature of the subject. I also view this like insurance, that we hope we don't need it, but we like to have those skills and those tools in place should we need it. The people that have completed our workshops, the feedback that I have gotten has been positive. They seem to feel more equipped and more ready if they are in a crisis or if they encounter a friend or a family member that is. At least it gives them some direction, hopefully, and a little more confidence to have some of those difficult conversations and to help those people find resources and seek help. Some of the workshops I teach also are primarily for ag industry professionals. So it might be the dairy nutritionist or a veterinarian or an ag lender that goes to farm after farm. So they may deal with many people in a day. And I've also heard good feedback from them that they feel more prepared. And a few of them have actually had to use some of those resources that we have provided and been able to make some referrals to people to help find the help that they need.
You have one of those coming up, Communicating with Farmers Under Stress, on May 21st, next Tuesday. As you mentioned, for ag professionals who serve the industry and work with farmers and their families. So who is it for? It's for ag industry professionals. And then what will they learn as part of this webinar?
Correct. It is for ag industry professionals. It's a free webinar. We offer them quarterly. And we cover the things that cause farmers stress, because even though some of our professionals work in agriculture, they might not have a handle on all of those stressors. So we review the things that cause farmers stress. We talk about the signs and symptoms of stress. We talk about active listening and understanding how to approach a farmer who is exhibiting signs of stress. And then at the end, we also share many resources for well-being and for those professionals if they want to refer a farmer, if they are concerned that farmer is contemplating suicide, what they need to do. And we leave them with the tools, hopefully, and the skills that if they encounter that situation, they are prepared to deal with it.
It's a free webinar, Communicating with Farmers Under Stress. They're asking for registration, though, to get the link to access the webinar. And there's registration and more information at extension.psu.edu. The Farm Stress team at Penn State Extension also has a podcast, as everyone does in this day and age. But this is actually really important and a way to get to busy farmers.
Yes. That was our idea with the podcast. We thought, what better way to reach people that spend hours either in their truck cab or in their tractor cab by a podcast? It's confidential. They're intended to be short, practical bits of information. We have three series that have been released so far, Stressors You Can Control, Stressors You Can't Control, and then the Farming Community Cares, talking with some of our partner organizations and some ways that they're helping to respond to farm stress. So yes, that podcast can be found at the Extension website that you mentioned as well.
Extension.psu.edu. You know, besides the website, where can folks get more information, especially if there's a farmer or someone in the agriculture community that just wants to reach out? There's actually a hotline?
There is. Yes, we have little wallet cards that have several helpful numbers. And one of the ones that I would strongly encourage, and I tell anybody that attends the workshop, just put this in your phone. Because the key thing to remember is you can call on behalf of someone else also. So if you're in a situation where you're not sure how to respond, then you can call and they can help walk you through that. One of those is the AgriStress Helpline. That number is 833-897-2474. And that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And again, that's the AgriStress Helpline. There's also another one, a little shorter number, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. You would dial 988.
If anyone feels in stress or you know that someone might be in stress, those are numbers you can call. Ginger, before we go, I just want to ask you, as an educator, but also as a dairy farmer, what is you want people to know about mental wellness for the agriculture community?
I think I'll repeat something that I just said, but to me, that's the key thing when people ask what is most important for me to know, and that is that you can be the resource and you can be there to help other people as well by knowing what those tools are and knowing where the resources are. So by putting that agri-stress number in your phone or the suicide prevention lifeline number in your phone, you never know when you'll encounter that situation. So be prepared and you'll be ready to act if you encounter a friend or a farmer that is in need.
Ginger Fenton is a Penn State Extension dairy educator, dairy farmer, and leader of the Extension's Farm Stress Team. Again, more information at extension.psu.edu. Ginger, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for your time.
All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, science stories with Joe Johnson. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York, a newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear the new exotic sounds of Mr. Moai and the Tiki Heads and Don Tiki, plus percussionist Ray Barreto on Senor 007. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's time for Science Stories with Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson is a former Port Jervis science teacher and Radio Catskill volunteer, and he's bringing us some science stories that caught our eye this week, including Otzi the Iceman's new look, thanks to genetic analysis, the strange way that African elephants like to communicate with each other, and those solar storms that spawned global auroras that have dazzled us all.
Yeah, you couldn't get away from it this weekend. It was everywhere. Unfortunately, I slept through it. My daughter-in-law got some pretty good pictures, but I slept through it Friday night, which was the biggest one. And then Saturday night, it was a little cloudy. I'm hoping for tonight. We'll see.
These are pretty intense solar flares that are happening right now. And so can you explain a little bit about what these solar flares are and the different intensities?
Sure. So last Wednesday and Thursday, there were actually 7 solar flare events that most of them came from an active region on the sun's surface called region 3664. It's where 2 large sunspots had merged together to form something 15 times the size of the Earth. And the second flare and the fifth flare were aimed pretty much at the Earth. A lot of them had shot off in different directions into the solar system, so they missed the Earth. Now, these were X-class flares. This is the largest type of flare there is, and they were an X4.5. They're on a letter scale where X is the largest. The highest that was ever measured was an X17, and they only got to that height because that's when the instruments measuring it burned out. The biggest that's ever been estimated was an X45. Now, this is a logarithmic scale, so every number you go up is 10 times stronger. So a X5 is 10 times stronger than an X4, etc. So an X45 is just really, really powerful. That's a huge coronal mass ejection. So a solar flare is caused by the magnetic forces within the sun. Because the sun is not a solid, it's twisting as it's rotating. It rotates about once every 27 days. And the magnetic field, the lines get twisted up, and it's almost like a rubber band, and they actually eject part of the surface off into part of the photosphere and the corona, the atmosphere just above the surface, off into space. Now, this is millions of tons of highly charged particles, mainly protons and electrons. So it's this big blob of charged gases running through, you know, flying through space. It takes about 18 hours to get to the Earth. Now, we can see it happen, so they were actually able to predict that this was going to happen. It only takes about 8 minutes for the light from the flare to get to us, so when we observe it happening, we know what's going on. Like I said, it takes about 18 hours to get to the Earth, cover that 93 million miles. It's a big blob of charged particles. It also has a large amount of X-rays and gamma rays in it. So you wouldn't want to be in the way of this thing. Now, luckily, we have a couple things that protect us. One, our own magnetic field around the Earth and the atmosphere of the Earth. So it's not dangerous to people, but it can have some bad effects on communications equipment, satellites, et cetera, et cetera. I know that Starlink satellites were having a problem over the weekend.
We heard some news about some GPS systems used by some farmers, too, mm-hmm. that may have been impacted as well.
And emergency responders and their radio frequencies are often impacted by this.
Now, these are X-class flares. They are not that frequent, but solar flares are not unusual.
They're not unusual, but ones of this size are unusual, and also ones that are aimed directly at the Earth are unusual. We are approaching solar max sometime later 2024, 2025, so the number of sunspots is going to increase. About every 11 years, there's a maximum output from the sun in terms of solar sunspots. But what happens is when these charged particles hit the Earth's magnetic field, they travel along the lines of force of the Earth, and they concentrate near the North and South Pole, creating the aurora borealis up in the northern hemisphere and the aurora australis down in the southern hemisphere around the South Pole. Different colors are due to the different gases in the atmosphere. The red and the green are due to excited oxygen atoms. They get a lot of energy from these charged particles. And the blue and the deeper red ones are the nitrogen molecules. Couple things to keep in mind. Like I said, solar max is coming up sometime. So this may not be the same, the last occurrence of like this we may see this year or even into next year. Now, this could have been a lot worse. There was an event in 1859 called the Carrington event, which many people have not heard of. It was a coronal mass ejection. It was witnessed actually by an astronomer, Richard Carrington. And this was huge. It was probably an X-45. And when it hit the Earth, it so charged up the Earth's surface that telegraph lines were burned out. It caused fires in telegraph offices. It caused people to get shocked from sparks from the telegraph devices. So it was a pretty strong event.
Now, these geomagnetic storms, is there any impact on health, on human health?
Not really. We have the atmosphere to protect us. We have the Earth's magnetic field, which is like a big force field around the Earth that deflects it to the North and South Poles. So there's not going to be any direct effect on life on Earth, on humans, on anything. It could very seriously affect our communications device, our technology. We talked about the Starlink satellites and the GPS satellites. So it can have a very large effect on us here on Earth.
All right, let's move on to somebody who was on the Earth many, many years ago.
Yeah.
Otzi the Iceman. Now, this is one of the world's most studied corpses, found in 1991.
Right. He was found high in the Utzel Alps between Italy and Austria, right on the border. There were a bunch of hikers, and they thought that they had discovered a modern hiker that had died and been frozen. With climate change, the glaciers are starting to melt, and he's literally melted out of the glacier. Radiocarbon dating tells us that he's about 5,300 years old, and he's named, by the way, for the valley where he was found. He was found in the Utsi Valley. Now, in 2001, they were looking at him in a little bit different angle with an X-ray, and they found out that he had an arrowhead in his back under his shoulder blade, and that he had apparently been the victim of violence. He had a lot of other trauma going on, too, when they re-examined the body. He's important because he gives us a unique picture of Copper Age Europeans. They studied the leather clothes he was wearing, his stone and antler tools that were found around him. He had very sophisticated shoes, multi-part shoes that they think were part of a snowshoe type deal. And they've even looked at his stomach contents to see what he was eating and what his last meal was.
So they're sort of reevaluating what they originally thought.
Right, right. Back in 2012, they had done an earlier DNA analysis of him. And unfortunately, it looks like there was some modern DNA that contaminated that sample. They had thought that he was from the steppes area. And the problem with that is that he was actually 1,000 years older than the steppe culture. And so that just didn't make sense for a lot of years. So recently they've done another DNA analysis. Our techniques are obviously a lot better than they were. And they found out some very new things. They had thought, for instance, that he was, you know, had fairly long hair and that he had very light color skin. And what they found out was that he had markers for male pattern baldness and he had very dark skin. Now, the body, if you, I'm sure everybody's seen pictures of it, it has very dark skin, but they weren't sure if that was because he had been frozen for so long. Little freezer burn, I guess. But he had curly brown hair, they think, when he had hair. He had brown eyes, and strangely enough, he had a high risk for type 2 diabetes and Alzheimer's. Like I said, the DNA analysis is a lot better these days.
He's kind of a scientific celebrity.
He really is. He really is. He's not the oldest mummy, but he's the oldest European mummy, I believe.
And this body of science with him is astonishingly comprehensive.
Oh, what they have found, sure. What they've been able to – they've looked at the pollen that was snagged on his clothes so they could tell what time of year it was by what was blooming in the mountains at that time. Wow. They've looked at his bones to see where he grew up because they can do an analysis of the minerals in the bones. They have incredibly studied, incredibly cool stuff.
Thousands of people every year visit his mummified remains, which are on display at the Museum of Archaeology in Bolzano, Italy.
They are. And if I get to Italy, I will probably go.
All right. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. A new study exploring elephant greetings. Now, there are a lot of ways that humans say hello.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that this way, one of the ways that elephants say hello does not catch on. Let's talk about this study in elephants and their greetings.
So this was a new study that was just published in the journal Communications Biology. They did an observational study of a number of elephants that were what they call semi-captive elephants. They're on a game preserve in Zimbabwe. And so these elephants regularly separate and reunite for various reasons. And what they found is that when they came back together, that there were elaborate greeting rituals between groups and between individuals. And multimodal greeting rituals, they were both vocal, they were tactile, they were what they call body acts. So the vocalization was like they would rumble each other. And I watched some of the videos, and it's really, really interesting to see the two elephants walk up to each other. You hear them rumble at each other. They're flapping their ears. Sometimes they hold their ears out all the way. Sometimes they put one back. That's really interesting videos to watch. They swing their trunk around. They touch trunks with the other elephant. And yes, as you alluded to, sometimes defecation and urination is part of this greeting ritual.
They're just excited to see you, old friend.
Now, the greetings were – I thought this was really interesting. It's like if you're watching your friend and their back is towards you, how do you get their attention? You say something. Well, elephants do the same thing. If the elephant that they want to greet is not looking at them, they use vocalizations. If the elephant is looking at them, then they use these body acts, the ear flapping and the trunk swinging and et cetera, which I thought was pretty interesting. It's a certain level of awareness of what's going on with the other elephants. There were a lot of combinations, too. Sometimes they would swing their trunk and flap their ears. Sometimes they would flap their ears and do the vocalization. It depended upon whether they were males or females. Whether it was just females, it's a pretty interesting study. Now, a couple of questions that I have, you know, what information is being conveyed here? Hey, I missed you, or hey, I went and had some good food. What are they really trying to tell each other? Do all elephants speak the same language? I wonder if, you know, elephants in the wild do this as well. These were elephants that were in a game preserve and were regularly interacting with humans.
The majority of previous research regarding communication among mammals has really focused on chimpanzees and other apes, and this research is focused on how they vocalize and why. There was previous research on how they engage in their greeting rituals, but it was unclear whether the physical actions were deliberate gestures used for communication, and it turns out they are.
Or just random action.
Yeah, yeah.
It turns out
they are.
Yeah.
Joe Johnson, thank you so much for these science stories again. Always fascinating.
Very welcome, Tim. It's been a pleasure.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Maggie Fitzpatrick is here to help us move toward health. This is Radio Chatskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
If you've never donated to this station before, that's okay. Public radio is available to everyone for free. But we do rely on listener support from those who are able to give. So join the community of supporters right now. And thanks.
Give what you can at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her column appears every Tuesday. It's Moving Toward Health. It's on newsstands today and also online at scdemocratonline.com. And she's here with a big one. This is a big one, this topic, overcoming gym anxiety. Gym, G-Y-M, anxiety.
Yeah.
Oh, just even those three letters strike fear.
I know. This kept coming up recently and I was like, you know what? I should probably write about this.
Good morning, by the way.
Yeah, good morning to you, too.
So going to the gym can be one of the most anxiety-producing activities. I speak from experience.
Do you?
Yes. I don't know why. I think it's just I kind of feel like I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that everybody else there does, and they're all watching me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's exactly how it feels.
It's, I'm like, okay. Like, so there are times when I've gone to a gym where I feel like, okay, I know what I'm like doing. And I just like beeline to like one area or one place, machine, whatever. And just like, okay, focus on this. Don't look at anybody else.
Yeah.
It's a strange experience.
It is. It's a really strange experience because, you know, when you go into any environment where you're new, right? Of course, you're like, well, I don't really know what's going on here. The first time I came in here, I'm like, where do I sit? What do I do? Like, you don't know what's going on, right? But there's something about the gym where it's even more heightened. And I think it's because, you know, it's very personal to us. Like, our health and the way that our body looks and the way that our body feels is very personal to us. And so those feelings get magnified.
Well,
right?
Also the reason why you're probably there is to, you know, make yourself feel better, you know, and you know you need to or want to because of moving toward health, as you say. And so getting just going in there, there's already this sort of anxiety walking in. But it is interesting that it's not just me. There are other people that feel this way, including yourself, you say.
Yeah. And most people do feel this way. I felt this way. I remember in high school, we would work out a little bit for sports, but it was always with the team and, you know, very structured. So I didn't ever really have to think about anything.
Plus people you know.
And people I know, my friends, right? But then when I got to college, before I started studying exercise science, I was like, oh, I guess I should probably go to the gym, right? And so I walk into the gym and I remember that feeling of looking around being like, I don't know how to use any of this equipment. Everybody knows what they're doing. I look like a fool. Everybody's watching me. I don't know what to do. So then you just end up on the treadmill. Right. Or the elliptical or the bike. And you just are there and you're like, OK, I'm here. I made it. I did it. And I'm not going to leave this safe place, this safe piece of equipment for the rest of my life. And we want to be able to transition out of that phase. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with walking into the gym and saying, OK, I feel comfortable walking on the treadmill and I'm going to go do that because it's my first time or it's my first week or whatever. That is totally fine. Like, look at you. You're there. You did it.
Yeah.
Right. And we want to transition out of that because you're there for you. You're there to get the most out of that experience. Right. So if we can start to mitigate those feelings through certain types of actions, then we can, you know, overcome that.
So let's talk about some of the ways to feel less overwhelmed and intimidated in the gym. First off, you say maybe Bring a friend.
Yeah. Honestly, it is one of the best ways. Sometimes it's hard to get your friends to go to the gym with you. However, whether they know what they're doing and can help you, or they have no idea what they're doing either, and you're both just in it together, there's something about going to a new environment with someone else and you have that support system, right? It's like built in. You guys are, you're in it together. You're both trying to figure it out. And that can really help us feel less alone and less overwhelmed in, you know, a new environment. And then the one other thing that I really like to do, whether you're with someone else or you are alone, is it's okay to like take a set of dumbbells and move to an area in the gym where there's less traffic, right? There's a little bit less going on. You have some space. You can keep your workout really simple. And that's a great way to, like, it's kind of like a bridge, right? We're building up into, okay, I moved from the treadmill or the elliptical and I'm doing some sort of, you know, strength training, whether it's dumbbells or it's like a, you know, a cable machine or something that you feel comfortable with. It's okay to kind of park yourself somewhere and get your bearings and go through, you know, your workout that is simple. And then you come back the next day and either you do it again or you try something new, but we don't have to make it out to be where I have to use every piece of equipment and I have to know what I'm doing right away.
Right. Well, and another way to get past that a little bit is to get a tour or even a training session from someone at the gym, somebody that works there.
Yeah. Most gyms that you go to, like 99.9% of them, have someone working there, whether it's a trainer or even just someone at the desk. And their job is to make sure you're having a good experience. Right. So if it's trainer, obviously, you know, they want you to pay them for sessions. However, if you're new at a gym, a lot of times they will help you, right? And they'll give you, I know at my gym, I go to Crunch in Middletown. And if you're new, they give you like a free session.
Some do give you a session.
Exactly.
Take advantage of that.
Take advantage of it, because those people are there. Like as a fitness professional myself, when I was working in a gym, it's so lonely when no one comes up to talk to you, right? Like my job is to help you. And all of those people are in that job because they love helping people, right? And so they're, although it might feel intimidating to go up and ask for help, that's probably the best person to go and ask for help, because they know everything about that gym. And also their job is to not judge you versus like someone else that's exercising. Maybe they don't want to help you. They're doing their own thing, whatever. Right. But whoever works there, that's their job, is to help you.
As I said at the beginning, I was like super anxious about the gym and I did take advantage of seeing a trainer. And then I realized back in the day, that having a trainer was the way that I would hold myself accountable for going to the gym, because I'm paying for this session and this person's going to help me and kind of, you know, frame that anxiety for 30 minutes or an hour, whatever that was. And so I found it helpful during a certain period of time where it was also a busy job and it was like, I'm dedicating this time and I need to make the most of it. But again, it helped ease that like anxiety of it.
Exactly. Because you're taking on so much at once, right? You're taking on a new environment, a new habit, new things you don't know how to do, right? All of these things, that's a lot to handle at one time. So if we can essentially like outsource some of those stressors, right? Like, let me get someone to help me with this. Let me get someone to teach me with this. Then that will decrease the amount of overwhelm that we feel, because the burden is not fully on us, right? We can have support.
And then you also say, you know, lastly, don't be afraid to start off slow. And I think we've said this before in other conversations, that it doesn't have to be this long, complicated thing that you're doing.
Exactly. Your workout can be super simple. It can be short, right? Even just the act of going and getting a feel of what's going on is going to make it easier the next time you go, right? And with that being said, we have to just expect that it's going to take some time. It's going to take time for us to start to feel more comfortable in a new environment, no matter where it is, whether it's a new job, a new gym, no matter what, it's uncomfortable for a while. It's challenging to do new things. So we have to be able to accept that and understand that it's going to take longer than we would like, but it's probably not going to take as long as we expect.
And, you know, as you're a fitness professional, but as a female fitness professional, is there another anxiety also for women in the gym, because it's sort of a male dominated typically area?
I think so. I think, you know, especially with the different sections of the gym, right? You'll notice a lot of women will gravitate towards the cardio area, or a lot of gyms have a women only section, which is really nice, because then, you know, you can start to build that bridge, right, into the bigger section. But Strength training areas can be scary because it's exactly what you're saying. Everyone looks like they know what they're doing. It's really intense. Maybe people are loud or whatever, you know, and it's overwhelming. But the more you can just be like, I belong here. This is for me too, right?
Yeah.
And you'll start to notice that actually most people who go to the gym are really nice because everyone's there to be better.
This is sharing a common goal, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it feels intimidating, but at the end of the day, it doesn't have to be.
What about group fitness classes? Is that another way?
Yeah. Yes. Amazing. Group fitness classes are incredible because you don't have to think. Someone is there the entire time telling you what to do, and you're surrounded by other people who are all trying to do the same thing. So it's a great place to start because, like we're saying, we're taking away some of that stress of trying to figure out what to do, right? Someone's telling you what to do. You don't have to think about it. Also, like you're saying, there's that accountability. I signed up for this class. There's a time block. I don't have to figure out how long I need to be here for, right? Like all of those things are kind of taken care of. So that is a really, really great place to start or just to continue to incorporate. Like I love to still go to classes.
Yeah. And then, you know, also you say in closing in your column that you should allow yourself to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's natural. It's normal. There's a lot of people that have, as one article I saw, a different article calls it gym intimidation.
Oh, that's good.
That, you know, gym anxiety or anxiety in general, that's a real thing. So just be aware of that. Be, you know, allow yourself to feel it, basically.
Right. And like, you know, of course, there's like clinical anxiety, which is kind of a different thing than what we're talking about here. Right. But in normal life, there's going to be times where we feel anxious, where we feel uncomfortable, where we have this range of different types of feelings. Right. And we have to recognize that in that situation where we're feeling something in a certain moment, it's not going to last forever. And those are the types of feelings that help us grow and become better and, you know, move toward health and all of those things. If we continually avoid those feelings, then we avoid any opportunity to change.
And you can reframe some of that like negative self-talk too, because when you realize that people are probably there also spending as much time in their heads as you are.
That honestly is one of the biggest things. Like if you go stand in the gym, right, and you're thinking, oh my God, everyone's looking at me. I have no idea what I'm doing. And then you can kind of just watch those thoughts for a second that are going on in your own brain. Those are the same thoughts that are going on in everyone else's brain, or they're like jamming out to their music, or they're just really happy to be there themselves or something.
Thing, right?
They're doing their thing. They're not watching you. And even if they are, they don't care, right? Like, it's like, I see you over there, but I don't care. Like, it doesn't mean anything to me, you know?
Yeah. Or what you think it means
exactly.
In your own head, right?
Yeah. So yeah. Everyone's going through their own experience, and it can feel like everyone is watching you, but just remember that how you feel is probably how they feel too.
Maggie Fitzpatrick is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her column is Moving Toward Health. We were talking about overcoming gym anxiety. This is a good one. Thank you. It's in the newspaper today and also online at scdemocratonline.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take a break. And when we come back, Matt Worden from Space Acres Comedy Night, an old comedy night in a new space. We'll learn more right after this. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, stories about good intentions gone bad in the workplace.
If anything, it made them worse off by reducing their employment rates.
Can economists turn good intentions into good outcomes?
I can't emphasize enough that with slight adjustments, you can get your cake and eat it too.
How to pave the road to hell. That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. This afternoon at 1 o'clock on Radio Catskill.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Another way to help us bring you the news is donate a vehicle you don't need. Car, truck, motorcycle, you can donate to this station and it could mean hundreds of dollars of support. Thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not. Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. FarmArts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Space Acres Comedy Night is now at New Memories. It's their first show in Parksville this Thursday, the 16th at 7:30. And it's hosted by Matt Worden. Matt joins us this morning. And you brought a couple of guests with you, too. Matt, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Surprise. Hi.
Yeah, I brought a surprise guest, though.
Yes.
I know.
Who do we have?
This is Allie. Allie is one of the owners of New Memories. Say hi.
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 Hello.
Hi. And Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
You're one of the comedians that's going to be performing.
Yes, sir, I am.
Awesome. Let's talk about New Memories for folks who may not be aware of it. New Memories, if you were driving on 17, that's that big former, antiques collectibles store in Parksville. But now, New Memories. What's going on?
Yeah, that's what it was. And now it's New Memories, and we're an event space. We do art. Art, shows, and music, and entertainment, like theater, now comedy.
Yeah, you guys have been doing a lot, and part of, I think, the Parksville Priorities folks there, too. Everybody trying to revitalize Parksville, and that's such a huge space that a lot of people know. Is it intimidating trying to do something in such a huge space, or has it been, freeing to have all the space?
A little of both, actually. Yeah, no, it is definitely intimidating because it is a big space, and needed a lot of work, but it's also great to have that much space.
Yeah.
To do.
And Matt, you've been doing Comedy Night around the Catskills for the last couple of years. What brought you to New Memories?
Yeah, well, Allie and her husband Marcus and my family, we're all good friends, and it's sort of been perfect over there. They have a side room. Well, it is a huge space, but it also has some smaller spaces within. So they have a big stage, but they also have a side room that's sort of perfect for comedy. And so we're excited to get it going, but they've just been, they've been working like crazy getting this place up and running. So, it's finally in a state where, where they can invite us over and we can do our thing.
Is this going to be the new home of Space Acres Comedy Night, you think?
I think that's the hope, but,
yeah.
We'll
see how it goes today.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see how Thursday goes.
Michael, you're going to be performing on Thursday. Have you been here in the Catskills before?
Yeah, actually, I grew up around here. So I've done comedy around here a couple of times, and usually I'm more so like Lower Hudson Valley, Albany, New York City, Jersey City. I'm kind of all over the place.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Liberty, actually. Yeah.
So how does Liberty impact your comedy at all?
I hope not, man. to be honest. Liberty's an interesting place. It's interesting.
Where do you kind of draw some inspiration for your comedy? How would you kind of describe it?
I would think I draw a lot of inspiration from home. My home life. My parents, my friends, my family, just experiences. And then that related to new, different perspectives that I have on life.
Yeah. Strict family, freewheeling? How would you?
Oh, it's pretty strict. I'm African, so we don't really got a choice but to be strict. My mom was tough growing up, but, I think I'm a good kid because of it.
You came out okay.
Yeah.
Has she seen your show?
Oh, no.
Is she listening now?
I hope not. Okay, I'm gonna have to come home to something special if she is.
Yeah, but I was really fine. I was really psyched to find Michael. I was at an event at Bethel Woods and he was performing, and I was like, because when we started doing this show, there was not a lot of comedy happening in the area, and so I ran into him and I waited. I feel like as soon as he got off the stage, I ran up to him, but I was just psyched to have a local son in the mix here.
I mean, surprising too, the Borscht Belt, where there was a lot of comedy for a long, long time, no comedy at all. There's now kind of this renaissance. There's some other people doing comedy here. Is that feeling good? Are you kind of happy to see that revitalization?
Absolutely. There's things happening in Ellenville. There's things, I think you were just talking about a show in Narrowsburg, right?
Yeah, Narrowsburg at the end of the month, the 25th.
Yeah. So, we started doing our show in 2022 and there was an immediate groundswell. I could feel the response, when I would tell people. So it's really exciting. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the more shows, the better people start to remember about this area, and we'll get people coming through and making it happen.
Having a little fun. Who else is on the bill for Thursday's first show at New Memories in Parksville?
So our headliner is this guy, Matt Lopez. He's super funny. He's a city comic that he knows a lot of the people that have headlined the show previously up here. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I'm really excited because the scene is really starting to happen. Like Michael will be there, and there's another comic from, I think he's more in the Hudson Valley, his name is Frank Moshman, and he is like a super Catskilly, like shticky comedian. So he's going to do some time. And then we get two people from out of town. We have our headliner, Matt Lopez, and then he's bringing a feature comic, Josh Mandel. So we got, you know, a couple of local and a couple of visiting comics, and that's kind of the idea. We're trying to keep it all, you know, mixed up and keep people moving through.
Michael, I'm wondering, like, growing up and, you know, finding places to go and not necessarily having that in this area, what do you think it is that's sort of spawning this revitalization?
Man, I think it's just the product of hard work and effort, you know what I mean? By like,
it's pretty much, it's us. It's me and Michael.
Yeah, my fault. Yeah,
pretty much.
It's really just Matt.
I was leading you to the answer. all right. And then, Allie, anything else that you want to talk about that's coming up at New Memories that we can get in before we go?
Yeah. The other thing we have that's coming up soon is Memorial Day weekend. We're having a spring bazaar. And so during the day, we'll have pottery, art, live plants, artisan products, you know, fun stuff like that, food. And that's Saturday from 11 to 5. And then right after that, we'll have a short film screening and a whole bunch of different film artists that put some stuff together. And then we'll have bands starting at 7. So we've got 4 bands in the lineup, and it's going to be a really, really fun day and night.
Where can folks get more information? Website, social media you want to mention?
Yeah, on New Memories Parksville USA on Instagram.
Okay. And Matt, where can folks get more info on Space Acres Comedy Night?
You can go to acres.space/comedy is our website, but also on Instagram, we're Space Acres Comedy Night. And yeah, we're looking forward to the show this Thursday.
Thursday, the 16th in Parksville. Doors open at 7:30. And Michael, before we go, your social or website?
Yeah, man, Instagram would be the best. It's if you type in my name on Instagram, I know it's going to be hard for most of people listening right now.
Spell it out.
But AGUNBIADE. Now, if you had a piece of paper in front of you, that would have been useful.
Or you could go to Space Acres Comedy Night, and you can find all the links to Mr. Gunbiade over here.
Heck yeah.
All right. Thank you guys for coming in. Thanks for joining us this morning. Doing a comedy early in the morning, I know it's not the most exciting thing here for comedians.
Thanks for having us. We're really glad to be here.
Right, thank you.
Thank you, guys. All right. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can hear this episode, previous episodes, and all of our local programming at our website, wjffradio.org. And a reminder, tomorrow is Hudson Valley Gives. It's a 24-hour event spawning 7 counties with one idea in mind, give where you live. Tomorrow, we're asking for your donation to help support the renovation of the White House on our property here. We've partnered with Sullivan County BOCES and Delaware Valley Job Corps, so their students can get some real-life hands-on experience in construction, and your donation will help support buying those materials that will help turn that space into some new office space for us. So go to Hudson Valley Gives tomorrow or WJFFradio.org and make your donation. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
On the next Radiolab...
You know, I was traveling with her all over the world.
We'll meet the celebrity psychiatrist who brought us the 5 stages of grief.
It's like going on a rock tour.
All of these young kids in the streets is going, ah!
And we'll ask, how did this lady get it so wrong?
Doctors were literally spit on her. You know, it just went from one controversy to the next for her entire life.
That's on the next Radiolab.
Wednesday at 1 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today, turning cloudy, a high of 72. Tonight, cloudy with a few showers, low of 54. And then cloudy and a little rain, cooler tomorrow, high of 65. On Point is next from WBUR Boston. It's 11 o'clock.